thank you, Everard. So I have a little to apologize because I forgot 2 days ago my disk, which holds the data in Caltech. And so now I have reconstructed my presentation, what the things I have in, on this laptop. So it is not, I don't have a complete situation. But anyway, I put a sequence of talks as Kaneda has done before. So you will see a sequence of talks. let's first of all explain a little bit what is this flow, which is a flow which was first considered by, I think, the group of Araft in Cornell. And there's perhaps the simplest dishomogeneous shear flow. The simplest dishomogeneous turbulent flows, because there is no shear, so there is no production of kinetic energy. And you can conceive it as a perturbation in either the kinetic energy or the integral scale in space. And either numerically, but also in the laboratory, is built by placing two isotropic flows aside with different kinetic energy and possibly also different integral scales, and leaving them interact in time, or in space, in the laboratory, in space, in the numerical simulation in time. So you have actually a free decaying, temporal decay with these flows. In the computational domain, I'm presenting here results from direct numerical simulation. The computational domain, to keep the cyclic boundary condition, you have to put actually two shearless mixes, one in the middle and one in the lateral part of the computational domain. So for the rest, anything is standard. I would not like to spend time on the methodology, but maybe for the things that is more considered more interesting on the results.
The profile is the velocity profile?
No, this one is the kinetic energy. There is no mean velocity profile. In fact, it is a shearless.
Oh, shearless, okay.
No production of kinetic energy. Oh. I consider this because numerically is quite easy to keep the variation or not, or the kinetic energy and or the integral scale. Working on the spectral properties of these two fields, you can vary the integral scale and the kinetic energy. In laboratories, it is much more difficult. It is with passive grids, you can generate such a flows, and usually, necessarily, you will have that the largest integral scale is always associated to the highest kinetic energy level. Instead, with active grids, it's possible, in principle, also to introduce, to variate the integral scale in such a way that where you have the highest energy, you have the lower integral scale. So you have an opposite gradient of large integral scale and kinetic energy.
So how do you impose in your numerics these two different integral scales?
Working on for the integral
the
scale.
Time, right? I mean, this thing is being simulated. It's actually two boxes which are simulated separately, or what?
They are put aside in the computational domain, and they are matched with a hyperbolic tangent function at the initial time. So you give weight. You sum two fields where you give weight one to the high energy level and weight zero here, and then you add another part where you convert weight zero to the high energy, weight one to the low energy, and they are matched with a hyperbolic tangent. So it's
the
a kind of
is homogeneous. The forcing is every other thing.
There is a decay in turbulent flow, so there is no forcing.
Yeah, but initially you have to make it. So you have to make the turbulence. What do you mean decay? How do you make the turbulence?
We take
some initial condition.
Some initial condition, practice. We use two, the one by Vray, done in Stanford, and also the one done by Toschi, Biferale, field on 1,000 to the cube. And so for the integral scale, we work on the spectra, and filtering the larger scale, and also leaving the two different fields to decay in time. And if you leave an isotropic field to decay in time, the integral scale becomes larger. So there are various ways to obtain a different, to change the integral scale. So let me go to right away to the, okay. The title of the talk today is associated to the anisotropy induced by the special variation of integral scale. So what we get, this is a snapshot, a general situation. These are a kinetic energy contour. And so this is a general situation where you can have a ratio of the two kinetic energy, which is here 6.6, and also two different integral scale in the two sides of the domain. Here it is after some time, six eddy turnover times.
Which it is, on the left or on the right?
Pardon? Which?
To define the eddy turnover time, you need to use
your in this case, it was defined on the properties of the large, higher energy side. So you take the variance of the velocity and the integral scale, and you build the eddy turnover time in this way. So, let's say, there are possible combinations. You can have only the kinetic energy gradient present. You can have both the kinetic energy gradient and integral scale gradient present. If you have both, they can be concurrent or opposite. Or you can have a flat kinetic energy field and just introduce a variation of the integral scale to see what happens. So this was conceived also thinking about the very first experiment. The very first experiment done by Voraft was to demonstrate that this kind of flow can have an intermittency which is linked to the presence of the variation of the integral scale. Instead, with the experiment that we are carried out numerically, we have again find this result, but also demonstrated that it is not necessary to have an integral scale variation to have high intermittency, which is also diffused to the small scale, and also that the direction of the two gradients is important to enhance or damp the mixing. If they are concurrent, the mixing is enhanced. The opposite happens in the other situation. And also that if you have just a variation of integral scale, you can generate intermittency, you can generate also a step in the kinetic energy gradient, because the two flows decay with a decay differently. So there is a generation, a spontaneous generation of the step in the kinetic energy gradient, which induce again intermittency also on the small scale. And then we have some properties of the anisotropy on the small scale also to show. So this is first situation. The integral scale is flat and the kinetic energy gradient instead is present. In this case, we have a flow of kinetic energy from the high energy region to the low energy region. And the thickness of the interface is growing in time. And it's slightly subdiffusive in the three-dimensional case. If I have time, I will show you also results for the two-dimensional simulation, where instead the things are much faster, and the the growth in times or interface is instead um, the contrary of subdiffusive is
super
diffusive. Thank you. Okay, so let's concentrate on the anisotropy. First of all, let's start with the velocity moment, and so the large scale anisotropy. Well, it's not very evident, even if it is present on the second moment, but it becomes instead much more evident on the third moment. And you see here in the direction of the mixing, U is a fluctuation in the direction of the mixing, the flow of kinetic energy takes more than one half of the total flow. Then, skewness and kurtosis for the large scale. So inside the interface region, the region where the two turbulence interact, we get high region of intermittency, which is not centered in the very middle of the interface thickness, which is displaced towards the low energy the low energy part of the field. So we have a maximum of the flow of kinetic energy, which is more or less already merged in the part where the kinetic energy is low. So, and it is possible to define a penetration of the kinetic energy associated to this maximum. And in 3D, it is possible to show that increasing the kinetic energy ratio, we get an asymptote. Anyway, this value you can observe is a kind of high. This is of the order of, I don't see what is on the screen.
The mixing, the interface.
1 and 4.
Then the interface spreads unevenly in the two regions. Does it spread more towards the low energy?
Yeah. I will show afterwards a synthetic diagram on the penetration. So let's go to the small scale intermittency. So this flow, there is no shear. So in principle, is something is a flow where you should not expect a lot high scale intermittency. Instead, there is.
How does delta of t depends on time?
Slightly subdiffusive t to the 0.45. Yeah. And here, so this is the skewness and the kurtosis on the longitudinal derivatives. The symmetry in this flow is such, if we go back on the schema of the flow here, that you have only one inhomogeneous direction, which is this one. The other two directions, these and these, are homogeneous direction. So it is a kind of cylindrical symmetry. And so we should expect that, for instance, all the statistical quantity are the same in the in the two homogeneous direction and different in the dishomogeneous direction, of course. But it is interesting to observe that on the velocity derivatives, there is such a phenomena for the you have high deviation from the homogeneous isotropic level, first of all. So there is intermittency on the small scale. This is evident. But there is this different behavior of the longitudinal velocity derivatives in the homogeneous direction, which are becoming smaller than the value which usually is found in homogeneous turbulence, which is more or less minus 0.5. So This what means that if you take, since a longitudinal derivative, if you take a line of fluid particles which are aligned in the direction of the mixing, this is experiencing a contraction. So when particles are flowing across only a kinetic energy, a variation of the kinetic energy, in this direction there is a contraction and there is a kind of extension of the particles on a line, placed on a line element in the other two directions. So this is a odd quantity, this is an even quantity, the intermittency in this case is different, and this is also a measure of the anisotropy in the two directions. And we get such a value, which is high values for the direction. Dependence on the Reynolds number, well, with increasing the Reynolds lambda, it does not disappear, it slightly decreases, but not so much.
Yeah, this is Reynolds number averaged over the whole simulation domain, or to the left or the right?
To the eigenenergy phase side. We have now a run which are not yet well examined, they just ended at a Reynolds lambda of 250, yes. Something like 2,000 to the square, no, 2,000 by 1,000 to the square. Okay, so there is high intermittency, and also there is this peculiar behavior. Another thing, I will show you a picture after this presentation, is that if we measure the transverse derivative and the statistics of the transverse derivatives, we find that they are very small. And this is different from what happens in homogeneous anisotropic turbulence, where usually it is measured in the laboratory, at least, the skewness, the third, fourth moment of the longitudinal derivatives, and then to expect to present a tendency towards isotropy, it is considered the transverse derivative, the statistics on the transverse derivative, and it said, well, if these are going to zero, a very small, this is an indication of the tendency to isotropy. And instead, here we have also measure the transverse the transverse derivative statistics. They are small, and the flow is intrinsically anisotropic, as in then is intrinsically.
When you say this, there are two different integral length scales. How do you define the integral length scale?
Well, it's just not with the correlation. As integral or the correlation. No, with direct definition on the integral scale, on the correlation.
So you actually integrate the correlation function?
Yeah.
Which direction?
We make the mean, the mean of the free direction, the mean on the free direction.
Well, because, you know, I could go right into the interface and integrate along the interface direction.
It's more fundamental, this definition, so. This is, let's go to the situation where we have concurrent gradient, and we see again small scale intermittency. You see that it is increasing, because before we were around 6 for the kurtosis, and now we are 8, the maximum is 8. Also for the longitudinal velocity derivative, it's very high, the skewness is down to -1.4. Opposite gradient, there is a reduction, we expect a reduction, and in fact we are coming back to 6 for the kurtosis and to -1 for the skewness. Also, if we observe the penetration of the high energy field in the low energy field, when you have the opposite gradient, this is reduced. So this effect, the opposition of the two gradients, induce really a dumping, so to say, of the mixing, or the integration, if you want. Gradients on integral scale present, different from zero, and instead flat. So you have a flat energy, as a situation where your world is flat, same energy, a slight variation, because it's not possible to variate. Where the ratio, maximum ratio, is between the order of 2. Maximum 3, 2.8, I guess we haven't reached. So like a slight variation of the integral scale is capable of introducing into the field in time a variation of the kinetic energy. So there is a production of a kinetic energy gradient.
And so the delta of T would be the same for all these cases. The width of the interface is a function of time. It does not depend.
No, it does not depend.
It is always the same.
Also, we have done, and I can show you something with the passive scalar transport, and the results are the same.
So it doesn't matter whether the gradients are, opposing or they are in the same direction. The interface flows the same way.
Yeah.
Sub-diffusive.
Yeah, it is intermittent phases that is much influence.
What's the cause of the sub-diffusion?
But also in the 2D case where it is super diffusive, that is the same.
It's super diffusive in the 2D case? It's super diffusive in the 2D case?
Yeah.
Although the kinetic energy relaxes as well, it is not sustained by any other mechanism? I mean, you're...
For the 2D case, we have not done this the configuration with just the two different integral scales. We have done all the other.
Yeah.
But it is super diffusive, even if we have with a passive scalar transport. Not only we have checked this result by doing Lagrangian statistics in the 2D case, in the second case.
So if you match these two velocities, you take one turbulence here, another homogeneous isotropic turbulence over there. You glue them together. And the moment you glue them together, it's highly anisotropic.
In fact.
And so your interpolation of the initial condition has to do something. So I mean, what we know is U cubed over L is constant on the left and on the right, and then between U and L change a lot. And for example, we have right now measured just anisotropic turbulence, and we find that U is in there. Well, if L goes up, U goes down. Right? I mean, both of them go down. That's what you're saying.
The kinetic energy, yes, are
right.
Going down, but with a different decay exponent.
Because it's not dependent on
the
initial conditions. I don't understand how you can.
So it depends on the initial condition.
When you
anything
somehow the Navier-Stokes equation, you first make sure that the solution you have is actually a solution of the Navier-Stokes.
Yes, yes. In fact, the first time scales are always neglected to do the statistics.
So you run the code first for very small time steps. So this the code is time to self-adjust to the Navier-Stokes.
So we run the things over many time scales. Up to 30 on the average, and we discard the first part. So we have to build a two Navier-Stokes equation,
given
the things
that you put in is a solution to the Navier-Stokes equation. That's my first question. How do you even know that what you put in as an artificial initial condition solves the Navier-Stokes equation?
The two parts, right?
So at least you have to do a very small time step in your simulation so that the code has time to adjust itself.
Yeah, this is
all the fast, transients out of your simulation. But still, you can choose any initial condition. Yeah, but then the question is how important is it when you observe?
Well, there is an important proof, which is a comparison with the experiment's results. So we have a good comparison with the experiment's results. So this is the more definitive proof that you can get.
Okay.
Also, this lens, the matching lens, is not so small. So it is a smooth variation, mm-hmm. and it is as large as on the order of the integral scale. The two integral scales are not very different, as the same order. So we keep usually this length as a. What happens if you put this matching distance larger than the integral scale to generate the interaction? You have to wait a lot, okay. Because the two fields should, like when you say, okay. embrace themselves.
Sure.
Okay. So in this case, we were here. Okay, variation of the integral scale. And here you can see what happens at the beginning. The two energy are at the same level as time is passing. With the increase of the ratio of the two of the integral scale, which is the highest value is 2.8, you see the difference. So how quickly is growing this ratio, and so how quickly is generating a kinetic energy gradient. Because from one we get value as high as 6/6 time scales. If the ratio of the integral scale is small, close to one, this is much less evident. But as one you get a value around 2, it's very evident and it is increasing very fast. So here, this is the plotting time of the gradient of the kinetic energy. So you see a transient where it is building. And then, of course, during the decay phase, it is getting close to an asymptotic value, we think. But this is not well demonstrated at the moment. We should go further. In time in the simulation. For the delta, instead, you see the question was the dependence of the gradient of the integral length. We see always the same results. So always the same growth.
I don't see a square root law here. I rather see something which is proportional to time.
Fitting the data over longest time, we see that. At the beginning, always there is something which is always linear.
I see a big jump at the beginning, a constant, and then a surge in the end. By no way I see an exponent 0.45.
Well, I will show you another. This is the worst case because just the kinetic energy is not present. If we put the data with the kinetic energy present, gradient present, and I have many runs fitting all these runs. If you want to see just now, I have here. I don't have the slide but I have the diagram here. Okay. So this is the result for this kind of mixing, changing the value of the Reynolds lambda and the ratio of the kinetic energy. And 0.4 is what is given by this envelope, the yellow one. Which is a better average than what we see on the red line.
Okay, if you, instead of plotting delta of t over delta zero, you would be plotting delta of t minus delta zero over delta zero.
Yeah.
You get a square root.
Yeah.
All right.
Perhaps, yeah. No, a better. Okay. I want to show you afterward this figure, so let me keep that. Okay, so we were, okay. An interesting thing is that in this case, you get a nice collapse of the curve which represent the variation of the kurtosis with the skewness. And we are here comparing the case where there is no kinetic energy gradient at the beginning, and the integral scale is varied, and the case where there is uniformity of the integral scale and the presence of a kinetic energy variation. And you see that the intermittency here in this case where the kinetic the integral scale is more or less the three time on one side than the other, you have a higher intermittency than in the situation where the kinetic energy is present at the initial time. So this is also something which is not intuitive. It's not really intuitive. So high anisotropy and high intermittency on the small scale. This is a diagram where we can observe the asymptotic behavior with the kinetic energy gradient. We have reached a value of 10 to the 6. This is not apparent here, but we have data up to 10 to the 6, which is in practice the interaction of a turbulence with a still expansion of fluid, which has interest in geophysical situations. And what you see is that the velocity statistics tend to an asymptote, instead the longitudinal velocity derivative statistics, no. So for the small scale, the intermittency seems to be higher. So this is a schematic for the longitudinal derivatives. This is something that has not been observed before and which is going to be published on a physical review letters. So there is this different behavior on the longitudinal derivatives. And to say something about the isotropy, the small scale, the result is that you have to observe all these quantities in all the direction, not just in the direction of the anisotropy, and then to go to see the transverse derivative, which can be small. In this case, it's small, but there is a big anisotropy. So to go to see the terms outside the main diagonal of the velocity gradient is not sufficient, and to constate that these terms are going to zero is not sufficient to demonstrate that there is isotropy or anisotropy, a tendency towards anisotropy. Okay, this is a probability density function for the longitudinal velocity derivative. Let's go to this conclusion. For the large scale, there is high intermittency, function of the both of the integral scale and of the kinetic energy in all the combinations that you can have. The anisotropy is mild on the second order moment, but it became higher for the second and the third, and is slightly increasing with the Reynolds number. On the small scale, high intermittency, again, on the basis of the gradient of turbulent kinetic energy, on the gradient of integral scale, and it is much more intense than that on the large scale. Again, here is mild on the second order moments, but it is high for a higher moment, and this slightly decreasing with the Reynolds. Okay, so general conclusion, anisotropy, even in this case where you don't have, which is really a very simple dishomogeneous situation, There is all the evidence that the anisotropy is spread to the small scale. So that means that there is a long-range interaction because the small scale fills the geometry of the flow. So fills the structure that is given to the flow through the boundary condition or the initial condition. In this case, it's an initial value problem. Everything is an initial value problem. This kind of problem. Okay. So let's go to the passive scalar, which are results just produced and not yet published. And in this case, we have result in for the two configuration, three-dimensional and two-dimensional. Then I have also some comparison without the passive scalar for the two fields. Okay. So this is incompressible dynamics. So again, everything is standard. Here again, a schematic of the flow. And let me say that we are using the more standard for the integration of the passive scalar equation. We are using the standard situation of a delta 4. Maybe the one that Bohmann was saying is not the best possible. Representation of the dissipation of the diffusion, but okay, it is the more standard one, so we use that. Okay, why I have these two movies? So these are a two visualization of cuts inside the flow. These are the kinetic energy level 2D and 3D. And behind I have the passive scalar. But it is not certain that this
is the K passive
scalar?
The K, right?
Yeah. So this is a velocity field.
In 2D, do you have any friction?
In 2D, no.
No friction.
So now I have some problem to get the one in the in behind. So perhaps the best thing that I have to do is to close everything, which and to reopen, because I don't know what to do differently. The passive scalar is a kind of, this is a 2D simulation for the, and this is a 3D simulation.
There's no gradient in the passive scalar.
No, there is the same gradient, exactly the same in the two situations. But
it is homogeneous turbulence somehow.
Homogeneous in the two sides, then you have a higher level of energy shear and lower level shear. It's the same configuration as before. We have done the simulation very recently without the kinetic energy gradient, and we got the same law for the growth of the interface. So what we have observed that the higher statistical moments are sensible to the kinetic energy gradient, but not the determination of the growth in time of the interface. And this was something not a priori evident. So this is a mixing lens, if you want, which is defined as a distance in between the two points.
So in the sweeps of this mixing boundary. Yeah.
Yeah, the growth in time of the interface in 3D and in 2D, where we get 0.7 and 0.45.
There are huge error bars.
Pardon?
You don't give error bars on those exponents.
Okay. In fact, this is something that I was always saying to the people that have done this diagram. Put the error bars.
Yes,
the error bars can be 10%, around 10%. So they are not overlapping.
Yes.
They are not overlapping. And also, I don't have here the diagram, but I have done the same measure with Lagrangian statistics in the 2D case, where it is more simple because we don't need a parallel to use parallel computers, and we got the same results.
How can the delta for the scalar be larger in absolute value than the one for the energy? How can it be in absolute value? I'm not discussing the trend.
No, but it is not larger. Because in the diagram I showed you before, it was 0.3.
I'm discussing the absolute values. The red curve is above the blue one. Okay.
Yeah. This is something that we don't know yet. It is always like that.
It is always like that
in both 3D and 2D. So you miss, they are parallel, but this is above, yeah.
Exactly.
So this is one of the mysteries of the passive scalar transport. There are many mysteries about. This is one.
The energy itself.
What is there to drive it? If the velocity has not spread that far, what is there to drive the passive scalar?
The passive scalar that we put, we fill after the domain with the passive scalar. The red, I forgot to tell you, the red part is where the passive scalar is uniformly distributed, and here there is no passive scalar.
Mm-hmm.
So there is just a cut, a step. So this is mean scalar diffusion, 3D and 2D. The thickness, the variance in time in the two cases.
So how does it deviate from if you have no inhomogeneity? I mean, you would see also a spreading, of course, of the diffusive layer when you have no inhomogeneity in length scale or no inhomogeneity.
No.
It's just homogeneous isotropic turbulence. You could still see for the passive scalar, it's just a spread.
Yeah, in fact.
So what's different from that?
It's not very different. We have made the comparison with the case studied by Varafta, where he put a line, a source line for the passive scalar. And we get something closer, we show you. Here. The scalar line. So the black dot are the one, so it's a different configuration because we have a step. One part of the domain is filled by the passive scalar, the other nothing at the initial instant. This is the comparison with the laboratory data. So there is a linear source in the mixing layer center. And also the data by Varas present the same, which are 3D of course, the laboratory is 3D, the same growth than our 3D diffusion lens. It's growing the same way. Okay, on the skewness and mix and kurtosis. What we see, there is a strong non-Gaussian statistics at the mixing layer border. As intermittency penetrates, which is also, in my opinion, not really obvious, in the direction opposite to the energy gradient. and it is much more penetrating in the two-dimensional case. The same situation for the kurtosis.
Is there such a huge difference between 7.5%?
Where?
Which one? Oh, you have 1.1 and 7.5 looks the same. Okay, no, yeah. Right. Sorry.
It's fine.
It's just that I was mistaken.
Okay, and huge value for the kurtosis. And asymmetric situation again. but we should observe the intermittency gradually reduce as the mixing proceeds, also because everything is decaying. Yes. No energy gradient. And we have got this situation. This is for the two, only for the two-dimensional mixing. We don't have yet the data for the 3D mixing. We have an anti-symmetric distribution. And for the variance, we don't get self-similarity. But so again, what we observe is the same trend for the increase in time of the interaction lens. Scalar flux, much more intense in the 2D case. And no, it's not possible to find a situation of self-similarity for the two-dimensional case. So 2D, 3D passes scalar diffusion across an energy steps. All moments profile are skewed towards the higher kinetic energy region, which is not intuitive because you have like the passive scalar in this case is facing as a wall of high energy. And it is penetrating inside more easily inside the high energy region than in the other side. So a similar profile of first or second order moments, more or less. Large intermittency and non-Gaussian behavior on both sides of the mixings, even where the scalar flux is small. Larger asymmetry in moment distribution into the mixing. And 2D, no stretching, inverse cascade, long-range interaction, which penetrates more against the energy gradient. So this is some preliminary conclusion, because this part on the passive scalar should be meditated more, because it's not yet writing papers, not yet.
Last comment? Can you go back to the last comment about 2D? When you say long-range interaction, you mean in wave number space?
Long-range interaction here is measured in terms of the penetration distances which are associated to the maximum of the statistical quantities of the skewness and the kurtosis, but can be also thought about in these terms. I don't have here with me, but we have also the spectra in these two cases. Then if here, the last thing is a comparison of the 2D and 3D turbulent diffusion without passive scalar. And where I can give more precise data on the penetration. So we have always a kinetic energy gradient and a uniform integral scale instead across the field. And an interesting thing was the comparison between with the dimensionality of the field. So more or less all these results we have already seen before. Let's go to, okay. I have always this problem. Okay, we have already seen this movie. Let's go on. So the parameters are the kinetic energy gradients in this case, and hyperviscous coefficient, as I said, is with n equal to 2. This I already shown because you asked me something about, and so it seems well confirmed because we have done many simulations. So the 2D case is super diffusive, and the 3D is slightly subdiffusive. Don't take very much in consideration of this value here, but the fitting over the yellow line is around, is closer to 0.4, 0.54.
This 0.7 is compatible with being 0.66, or two-thirds?
Okay, yeah. In fact, there are many theoretical models which are very rough, but would get this value, I think.
Again, if you would be subtracting delta zero, I suspect that the 0.7 would be transformed into 1.
No, we have done actually that in a if I get the paper, because I don't have my disk, I will show you, because we have also done that. Okay, so on the velocity statistics, the skewness, what is remarkable is that in 3D we get self-similarity, which is apparently good, and not self-similarity in the 2D case. This is for a ratio of 10 to the 4. Same situation for the kurtosis, self-similarity in 3D and not in the 2D case. So this is the penetration. So the variation of the penetration, so the position where the flow of kinetic energy is the maximum, is going in time as t to normalized time, t to the 1. This is with the parameterization over the kinetic energy ratio up to 10 to the 6. And what we see is that there is no, so there is a fast evolution to respect to the mixing thickness. And we are not getting an asymptote.
It's kind of strange, which means that this point runs out of the mixing region. If it grows faster than delta, then somehow it runs away.
In fact, it was saying from the very beginning, in all these results, you see that the position where the flow of kinetic energy is maximum is more or less placed inside the low energy side of the flow. But delta is actually, by definition, is one half of the thickness, because we are using the definition used in the laboratory just to be able to do comparison. So the definition is not something which focus more or less on this point, because this point are not easily determined if this is a kinetic energy distribution across the layer. So the usual definition is to take 0.5 of the maximum level of the kinetic energy and 0.25. So if this is delta, more or less, so the penetration is larger than this value. Then you have two things: that delta is growing in time with some exponent, and so it is enlarging, and the penetration is getting to a constant value in the three-dimensional case to the spectra, to the thickness, and it is not getting to a constant value, still increasing in the 2D case, which is also not obvious, but since the dynamics is different, it is in general much faster than in the three-dimensional case, where you have all the wave numbers, the normal wave numbers, and the transient time of different wave numbers are very much different, in my opinion, studying the instability. If you observe the behavior of transient traveling waves normal to the main base flow, they can have transient times that last thousands of time scales that are much different from the longitudinal waves. And so here there is a representation. Our movie is already ended. Let's start it again. So the green line is the penetration. So the position where the skewness is becoming maximum. The infinity. So you see that is growing much faster into D, and it is, this is the mixing. So the two black lines are the mixing scale, delta, and the green line is the penetration.
I don't see much space between the right black and green. They more or less move. Ah, okay,
no,
now
no.
It disappears. And then a symphonic part.
Yeah. This is 22 time scales. But we can go, we have data up to 30, something like that. And then I have a new trans just concluded that can maybe can improve this kind of results. At least show it better, but it is perceivable. Okay, so somebody was asking me about the asymptotic trends of the penetration, which is here, with the kinetic energy ratio. In the 3D case, we get that the penetration is growing as delta, but which with a proportionality which is around 1.2. Instead, for the 2D case, no, there is, we don't get an asymptote. Then I was thinking a little bit about question like qualitative universality, that for some aspect is present and for other is not, and memory. So, my opinion, a reasonable definition of the of memories is on global quantities as a interaction length, can be the interaction length divided by the time derivatives. And assuming that what we have seen is true, so that we have the time derivatives which has an exponent of minus 0.3 for the 2D case, close to minus 0.7 for the 3D case. And so according to this definition, we have that the 2D configuration is much faster, and the dynamics is much faster, and so the memory is shorter. So there is this effect on the dimensionality. 3D has a slightly longer memory than 2D, but all the processes are slower. But in fact, this can be also understood in a general situation. If something is flat, it's not changing, it's a permanent memory. Very conservative regime are always the same, so they recall themselves and they have very low memories. Okay, so this is a conclusion.
More questions?
Yeah. You didn't give any spectra. You never thought, for example, of doing energy spectra layer by layer. You take
layer by layer, we can do. No, we have some data, but I don't have with me. We have also the spectra for the for the 2D case, where the decay is much faster. But if I get that my disk should arrive today. I will show you. Yes, we have that on the spectra.
So have you calculated the integral length scale along those layers?
Yeah, the integral scale.
I would be interested in seeing the fluctuating velocities and the integral length scales.
Right? The integral scale. Inside the interface.
Yeah, the layer perpendicular to the...
Mm-mm.
To the
mixing.
Mixing.
Yeah. Now these, all the statistics are done in this way, layer by layer, because it's a normal thing that we can do.
Sure.
So, but, okay. I already sent to Robert Antonia, he was curious about this data. I sent a bunch of figures to him, and so I have such a file in this famous disk. So I can show you maybe in an hour. I can put it on the wiki space.
Okay.
If I write my disk, I will put it as a new space.
Thank you very much. So this is the part that the green line runs away from the black one. That's kind of probably similar to what Lebedev saw in his. So you have a tongues of a strong turbulence penetrating into regions of weak turbulence, of weaker.
And also higher
turbulence. And that's where turbulence. Maximum of intermittency exists. And it's interesting that they penetrate by a different law than the mean energy mixes. And that's probably even one can try to guess. And that would be interesting to see how higher moments would penetrate even faster. And that would somehow can tell you what are those tongues and how they scale when they penetrate from strong into weak.
Yeah, actually, since the passive scalar was put on the low energy side, we have the two peaks at the border of the mixing. But the one which penetrates more is the one in the high energy level region. Because you see, this is larger than minus two, and this is in between one and two. It is also, but in a less extent, present in the free decay. Anyway, yeah. The passive scalar, all the model that we use is wrong. Because it was strange not to see an influence of the presence on the interfaces length. Evolution in time, not to see a difference corresponding to the presence or not of the kinetic energy gradient. We see a difference only on the higher moment, on higher velocity moment, and also on the velocity derivatives, but not directly on these quantities, which is always confirmed. Without passive scalar, with passive scalar, with Eulerian statistics, and with Lagrangian statistics, so we get away the same results.
This green line was for passive scalar?
The green line, no. It's inside this presentation.
The last that you've shown, the movie.
No, without passive scalar, only velocity field.
That's what I mean. The energy of high energy turbulence penetrates into regions of low energy turbulence.
Okay. In this case, yes.
It's not about passive scalar. It's about...
No.
And that's where you expect maximum of intermittency.
I am to be...
The regions of weak turbulence penetrate into strong ones. That's a different...
We have to build a movie similar to that also for the passive scalar. So we will have two lines, because there is a penetration on one side and on the other.
I'm not sure, but here it's clear why.
Okay. More questions? No, I think. Daniela again.
Gracias.